Hi, Church. This is Kate. This week, we're beginning a series of conversations with members of the Center Church community. These conversations will provide us an opportunity to engage with and hear insights on a variety of issues, and to learn more about the diversity of thought present in our church. Today's podcast features Jeremy in conversation with Ben Huelskamp, discussing a more expanded view of missions.
Ben, maybe kind of lay the groundwork for the conversation and tell us what we're going to be dealing with today.
Yeah, so when Jeremy asked me to kind of put something together and kind of gave me the freedom to choose from whatever I wanted to talk about, pretty quickly my mind went to kind of what I do for a living, which is I'm involved in missions-related work. And the more I thought about it, the more I kind of realized that it hasn't been something we've talked a lot about in our church.
Right.
And so I've kind of put together some notes about some of the things that I'm doing and kind of why I care about missions and why it's important right now, and also some practical ways that I think we as a church can look to engage in the Great Commission, Grand Commission of spreading the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess kind of backing up and giving a bit of my story, because I don't know if everybody in our community kind of knows my history with missions, but around my freshman year of high school, felt like God gave me a calling towards missions at a youth camp. And if you're suddenly suspicious if it was genuine or not, join the club, because I felt the same way.
It's as if you know our audience.
Yeah. So immediately had issues with it, fought it, was against it. A little bit later on, our church offered a missions trip, and I was like, well, I guess if this is something I'm called to, I should probably try it out and go. So went on a missions trip to Mexico. Really difficult experience by all reasons. I think I could have said, all right, I'm done, I'm never doing that again.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a challenging experience. Had a family member pass away while I was on the trip. Just lots of things that shouldn't have gone wrong did go wrong.
And it was,
but for some reason, that trip kind of stuck with me. And that I kind of missed the experience and the opportunity of getting to focus all my time on a ministry and on engaging with people that had real needs, spiritual and otherwise. And so I kept going on mission trips. Went to Nicaragua twice and ended up doing a study away in Ecuador, and kind of kept following that path, but ended up realizing that my religious degree that I was studying in college was not going to equip me to take care of myself outside of schooling, and kind of had a pretty radical shift that happened quickly, where I shifted to studying business. And to my surprise, that has actually been one of the better decisions that I've made and been led towards, because it's actually equipped me to do a lot in the missions field that I never thought was ever going to be possible. So currently I'm working for an organization that does business as missions, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, I think. And then also with a anti-human trafficking organization, and I'm using the business skills I acquired in school to help further the spread of the gospel and helping people in need, which is something I kind of want to talk about, is because I think that a lot of us have these preconceptions on what missions is, and it's becoming a lot broader and more accessible to the average person than it ever was before, because it's like you don't need to be a minister or a pastor to engage in missions work.
I think that I don't know exactly where you want to begin, Ben, so I don't want to knock you off course, but it does I'm interested in your thinking around the shift from the missionary who trains to do missions work, and then the missionary, whether it be in the States or outside of the United States, internationally, the missionary who says, okay, I'm gonna become a medical professional. I'm gonna become an educator. I'm gonna become a business person. And this kind of, I think there's a shift from this kind of old school. And I don't say that, it probably does sound somewhat pejorative, I don't mean it to be, but this shift from this kind of reaching indigenous people's view to embedding oneself and becoming a part of, like, another culture and community, and not trying to change everything about the culture and community, but rather becoming a part of it and integrating the gospel in that way.
Yeah.
So I'd love to get your thinking on that.
Yeah, so missions lately, or at least kind of in the recent past, has been you would go to a Bible school of some kind, you would receive training, you would maybe get cultural and language training, and then you would go to wherever you're going and commit to doing ministry there. In some cases, it was more of the crusade, like trying to reach as many people as possible. And in other cases, it was someone plugging into a particular community and trying to engage in some way in a traditional ministry type role of a pastor or a church planter. However, we're kind of finding, and even in some ways returning to, a method which is a little bit more focused on finding ways to gain access to particular communities that the traditional model isn't able to do as well, where certain countries are opposed to religious people coming in and doing religious work, and so another way around it is going and starting a business of some kind and using that business as an opportunity to get to know people in the community, to build friendships, and to have natural conversations about their faith with them. And so it creates that kind of creative access. But even outside of that, it's also in places that are open to Christianity and sharing of the gospel, it's possible to have access to different types of communities or different people within their communities where being in a business of some kind, because this is probably my frame of reference I'm most familiar with, is able to give access to business leaders and other business people in that community that you probably wouldn't have had access to in your normal, like, food drive or medical clinic or Bible study that you might be starting. So it's like certain, even like specific demographics of populations or communities are becoming accessible by doing things slightly differently.
Right.
And so, like, one thing that I'd like to communicate is that because the opportunities aren't just focused on someone who's gone to Bible school, it opens it up to a lot more people to be able to engage in missions work without needing to necessarily go back to school or to receive a specific training of some kind, because they can use what they've already have and have already learned through their careers or through the education path that they chose to engage in that kind of work anyways.
Yeah.
So kind of, for example, we've got several people that are doing stuff like CrossFit gyms, where they got certified.
That was not my first guess.
Right? Yeah. Right. They got certified as a CrossFit coach, which doesn't require too much effort, but they enjoy fitness. They enjoy that kind of camaraderie that comes from nearly killing yourself with physical exercise.
Of course,
and
right. Yeah.
They've built relationships with the people that they do it with, and that's their way to get to know people and share their faith with people.
Mm.
Which is really cool. And there's even some, like, adventure tourism where they'll go horseback riding in the mountains and go camping with people and, like, do guided tours and stuff like that. So they're using their passions and their interests to be able to interact with people and share something that they deeply care about, too. And that doesn't require you to go back to school and necessarily get an accounting degree or a business degree or engineering or any of those other methods, which is really cool and exciting. But even so, like, with all of that, it's like even the business's missions part of it, I think there's even opportunities within the traditional model to use your gifts and abilities in ways that you might not have thought of before, where, like, even stuff like if you're interested in music or graphic design or art or kind of the more creatives, it's like most churches are using that already and need people doing that already, and it's no different in the missions context either, where it's like they've got a community and they've got a PowerPoint and they want it to look good and they want it to be something that they're proud of, but they might not have the skill set to do it themselves. And even some of that's like, so much of this is becoming more and more possible to be done remotely too. So with this whole COVID thing that's happening, so many places are moving to online stuff, and that's no different over in the field as well. It's like churches overseas are doing Facebook Live events where they're doing their normal service for the people in their communities through the internet, because the internet's becoming so much more accessible and available to people.
Yeah, like as I'm listening to you talk about this, these diverse mechanisms, these diverse modes by which people engage in missions work. This diffusion of missionary activity into these other spheres, it feels like it's kind of, it feels like it's on trend or in step with what you see happening in churches elsewhere as well, right? Like, so in the same way that, you know, it doesn't surprise me that there are less full-time pastors and whether or not that's, you know, a good or a bad thing is its own pretty big conversation. Center has always been bivocational, and we've, I think, enjoyed that and maybe probably thrived in that mode. But, like, in the same way that there are, I feel like, less, you know, pastors who are like, okay, so I went to school for 6 years, and now I pastor full-time, and that's my career. It seems like also that's in missions as well.
Yeah.
So there's this. So I mean, that's changing the landscape. That's really changing the landscape of what this thing means and what it looks like.
Yeah.
I don't have a question. I don't think that ends in a question. But, like, it just seems like probably now there are new challenges.
Yeah.
You know, you can make some real arguments for the value of, like, somebody who is, and I believe there is tremendous value in this, like, somebody who's theologically trained, right? Or somebody who's thinking maybe they have a degree in anthropology or sociology. I mean, there's several degrees that you could see dovetailing into, like, making someone effective in this that are not, should not be, like, ignored, really important stuff. But also pretty interesting that we're moving away from that.
Yeah, because, like, the traditional model is still an incredibly valid and needed model, where someone's able to raise funds, and whenever they get into the field, they're able to fully dedicate themselves to the ministry that they're doing, which is incredibly valuable, because then, like, the tent-making side of it, which is based on Paul supporting himself by working with Priscilla and Aquila to support his income so that he doesn't place a burden on the church, well, that's also there. It's also means that you're spending time doing the work that you need to support yourself, and that's time away from ministry as well. So it's, and, like, for example, the time that I was spent in Japan this last fall, there's a real big shortage of people that are capable of pastoring and leading communities, where it doesn't necessarily mean that they would need to be full-time ministers, but there's a need for people that have that biblical training and the ability to teach. So it's like, I'm not trying to say that the traditional model is any less valuable, but that there's just more ways to go about it and more ways to express missional engagement that could allow more people to engage in it and maybe even stretch themselves and do something they wouldn't have normally done in the case of a need, like a shortage of teachers as well. And kind of what's, I feel like it's valuable when looking at the missions environment and what missionaries are doing is that one thing I've always appreciated about them is that it tends to look like church in the biblical sense of what the early church looks like when you look at that, where it's a lot of small community churches, a lot of people, like, living out the gospel tenets of, like, sharing things in common and... I don't know. I feel like there's a lot we can learn even on our side of how we do church here from how they're doing it over there, too.
It's so fascinating the way that, like, in some ways, I don't know, you know, I'm probably totally ruining your whatever flow you've organized. I hope this, what is interesting to me as we discuss this, is good. But, like, you know, and of course, again, like those, I mean, we're speaking primarily to our center community. So you know that we have a bias toward a very community-oriented, a very localized picture of church. So that bias is on the table, but it is interesting to see how, I was just reading, I don't know, this week, independent of our conversation, but reading Acts, early Acts, right, like 2, 3, 4, and forward, those first several chapters, and it's just so interesting to me how, like, you have this command to go and be baptized, and that is, we see that as a universal command.
Mm-hmm.
So that's taken very seriously by practitioners of Christianity across affiliation. But, like, on the heels of that, right after that, you have, and they shared everything, and, you know, they made sure everybody had enough, and they all, and that, we really stopped short.
Mm-hmm.
At that. Like, we're like, yeah, that's like cultural or not necessarily commanded. And I'm not even trying to get into, like, the exegetical debate around that. It's just very interesting to see how, like, it's interesting to see how the values of the church internationally, maybe we could use more of that here. So, I don't know. I think in that way, we just have a lot to learn from. I have many questions for you about this, but I think in that way, and I love your insight on this, but I think in that way we have a lot to learn from what's happening, particularly overseas, and how it is that these people, these various communities and people groups experience church and their faith very differently than we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in that way, there's so much value in for us and, like, just becoming aware of, like, oh wait, that for them is what church looks like.
Mm-hmm.
8 people in an apartment,
mm-hmm.
reading, you know, those chapters of the Bible out loud and discussing it like any of us would, like that, you know, taking communion together, sharing food with one another. There's just something so appealing there to me. So
yeah, no, for sure.
So I don't know, I guess maybe to put it into a question, and you go with this wherever you want, but how was your experience overseas and your experience professionally, how's that shaped how you view how the church should be here?
Mm-hmm.
Has that done anything for you there?
Yes. I think most of my experiences overseas have been really helpful for me trying to get outside of my kind of cultural blinders that I have to how we do church and how we experience our faith. 'Cause it is interesting kind of seeing how different communities, like, do worship and do teaching and speak about controversial issues like the Holy Spirit and stuff like that. And it, I feel like it helps me to keep an open mind about things and not to just assume that everything should be done how we do things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I feel like most of my trips that I've taken, and I feel like it's probably true in a lot of cases where really those trips are more for the people going than for the people that you're trying to help in those communities.
Right.
'Cause you're there for a very short amount of time. You're doing maybe like a community service project of some kind. And it is beneficial to the community, but it's also like usually a single one-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
Long-term sustainability isn't really sustainable with a group of 10, 15 people that were on a trip together.
Right. Of course, your time in Japan was not short-term.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's a little separate, 'cause I was there for a month and tried to still make a bigger impact than I probably can realistically without committing long term. But yeah, it's interesting because it's like, it's more, it, like, I think it's almost geared towards you being exposed to what Christianity looks like in different contexts so that you can take that back with you. And hopefully further support missions and the work that they're doing, but also to kind of challenge the things that you take for granted, too.
Yeah.
So, kind of going back to businesses' missions, something that I've been thinking about there is that it's a very multifaceted approach in how you can reach a community, because, like, the primary goal usually is the faith aspect of being able to share your faith with people and have a platform to do that. But there's also, like, multiple other aspects of it that are built in and kind of are synergized with it, where sustainability of, like, financial, not needing to have as much donor base, being able to kind of support yourself that way. But also it has economic and, like, community benefits as well, where they are able to employ local people, they are able to do things for their community and provide opportunities or activities for the community to come together and do different things that may not have been possible before as easy as before. So, like, one example is that there's a business that we work with in India that is a soccer academy. And so this particular individual played professional soccer, and so is highly qualified instructor and put together a league and trains coaches and hires all these local people to be these coaches. And one thing unique to India, or unique to countries like India, is that if an individual would convert, they would often be ostracized by their families. But soccer is something that's something the whole family tends to engage in. So it's when they do get their opportunities to share their faith with people, they're sharing it with the whole family at one time, not with just a single individual. So that if God moves in those situations, it's often the family coming to know God together rather than one person at a time. But even some of those things, I think, can be taken back, and I think some members of our community are engaging in it in some way already, of businesses' missions is something you can do here, too. Thinking of one person in particular that employs other members of our community, and...
That's true.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't think you would ever think of it as ministry. It's work, but...
Right.
It's an opportunity for ministry, I think.
Right.
And
so you have a very... I'm cutting you off, sorry.
Go ahead.
You have a... As I'm listening to this, and even... it's just interesting to hear your thinking fleshed out. You have a very open view. A very wide view of what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Business's missions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's... I think it's something that... Like, we talk about our faith being something that's a part of all of our lives. Like, not something that's secluded to just church.
Right.
And I think one of the places that we spend a significant amount of our time is in the work environment, because, I mean, that's where a largest portion of our hours goes, and I think learning to engage our faith in that environment is important to do.
And you would also put that under this umbrella,
mm-hmm,
of business, career, your professional life,
mm-hmm,
as this missionary act.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's something that I at least... tried to challenge myself that whatever I'm doing, I want it to be intentional for building the kingdom if possible. And sometimes this means you work for a secular company and, mm-hmm, you work for their goals, and maybe that's just an opportunity for you to share your faith with your coworkers or to build relationships with people, but
right,
really you can't influence the business or where it's going or anything like that. But then there's also, like, opportunities for, like, social good that you can create as well. It's like, you know, there's a large number of nonprofit organizations based here in Springfield that are created for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's them using their careers and goals and dreams to pursue that. So yeah, it's something that I spend a lot of time thinking about. And I think it's something that's a lot more easily accessible and available to everybody. It's, mm-hmm, just kind of trying to open up your mind to the possibilities that the thing you did for fun might also be an opportunity for you to bring other people in on your fun, and also to share something that's part of your core beliefs and goals. So
it's interesting how, like, it's interesting how a proper view of eschatology and ecclesiology leads to probably more, certainly a more robust and healthy view of missions, right? So if you believe that, as Kate and I were touching on, I think, last week, I mean, if you believe that our work is to promote the humanity of everybody, if you believe our work is to help heal the earth and restore it, that's going to bleed into your professional life. If on the one hand, if you view church as the place where we encounter God, like, in a sense, the sole place, whether it's said explicitly or kind of implied, as the place where we encounter God, then you're going to want to get to church as much as you possibly can. But if you believe, maybe if we were to put it on a continuum, saying you believe more like, no, actually, my role is to show Christ everywhere, then you're gonna have a more robust view of missions.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that you think? I was wondering. This was a planned question. My experience growing up was, and I grew up in a church that was evangelical, and none of this again is a criticism. It's just a descriptor, like evangelical and relatively traditional, and my view of missions was every some number of Sundays, this might be every few months, someone would come in. They seemed really passionate. They seemed great. Their, like, family was up on the stage at some point. And they inevitably were not as good a speaker or teacher as the pastor that I preferred. Or at least that's how I experienced it or something, right?
Right.
And then they asked for money, and I don't know what my parents did. Like, I don't know if I know if we gave them money, but, like, they, and that seemed all appropriate. But it was always just kind of like a thing of, like, they're coming from elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my construct, right? And I feel like that was clearly too narrow. Even though those people had needs that it's appropriate for the body to meet, right? But I guess to maybe make some assumptions that may not even be fair, maybe they're just my own background kind of filtering in here. Why do you think it is that maybe people who've grown up in certain evangelical environments have a tendency to not be as interested in missions? It's a super loaded question, because I don't know that there's one answer to that. But that gave me a certain picture of missions, right? And fairly or unfairly. So, I mean, what do you think it is that bias may be there?
Right.
As somebody who's now been embedded in it at a professional level from within the United States.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of factors that play into it. I think probably one of the biggest ones is just the logistical, like, difficulty of doing something like that, especially through the, like, traditional model, or no, it's challenging. Where in the traditional model, you have to build a significant number of support that will sustain you for years, not just for a short season. Because, like, an unideal scenario would be to go over, and by the time you're starting to get your feet wet, your funding isn't sustainable anymore, and you have to come back and raise more funds, which isn't ideal. And then also, it's like, not only are you entering an environment where you might not have any previous connections. You might not know the language. You might not know the culture very well. It's just really difficult. In the secular environment, for American businesses sending U.S. managers to foreign countries, the failure rate's 70%.
Hmm.
Like, it's just catastrophic. Like, people just don't last without a proper support network.
Mm-hmm.
And I think missions environment is actually one of the better ones that I've seen do it. Like, they do a good job of training, they do a good job of providing support and accountability and all of those different things. Even outside of the traditional environment and, like, the business of missions approach, like, if you're wanting to just go and start a business, it's like you start having to navigate not only the cultural and language stuff, but also it's like tax and visa and business permits and all of these different other complications that start popping up. So it's just, missions is a hard thing to do, and even though it's more accessible than ever, it's still incredibly complicated to do, especially if you don't have a support network built into it. But I do think, like, the initial impression, at least kind of what you were talking about earlier, is that the people that go into missions are the ones that are really committed and willing to sacrifice a lot to do it. And I think a lot of us are not as willing to consider it because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's like, I think in some ways we also need, like, God to place a specific calling on our heart for it too,
mm-hmm.
because during those difficult seasons, you're probably going to need something that's going to help you stay stable during that,
mm-hmm.
because you are inviting hardship, you are inviting challenge by jumping into it. So
yeah.
that might be a little bit more of a, just like a logistical answer than...
No, it's useful. It's interesting. It reminds me of one of my favorite books of all time. I don't know, of all time. It's one of my favorite authors of all time, Barbara Kingsolver. And I don't know if you've... The Poisonwood Bible, which is mm-hmm. just a... I mean, she's this lyrical writer, and the novel is tremendous. But it's been several years since I think I've given it two readings, and it's been several years since the last one. But I think that at least something that I know, you know, conversations I've had with people, not even really within our community necessarily, but in the Poisonwood Bible, you have this, a really interesting juxtaposition between, like, one family who goes into this indigenous, you know, community,
mm-hmm.
and in kind of a very fundamentalist, like, traditional, maybe almost caricature way, but I don't really think so. I think this certainly happened. They try to really upend the whole community, right? All of the traditions and rituals and practices and values of the community are challenged because this family sees them as being antithetical to their interpretations of certain biblical passages and so on. And then this family, not painted as villains, but is contrasted against a much more universal or ecumenical picture of I think it was a priest, if I'm remembering correctly. And those who have, like, read the book are now going to be texting corrections. But, like, this other character who entirely embeds himself into the community and really becomes a part of the community, not really attempting to change it. And so there's this... I do think there's this tension and this perception among some, maybe in more progressive camps within Christianity in the United States, that missions is in some way about pushing Western culture on people that are not asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you saying, I mean, I don't know, 10 minutes ago, you were essentially saying the opposite, which is that in your experience of travel, in your experience, like, working with missionaries, it's like you're actually seeing these beautiful things about other cultures and seeing how they can apply here. But I did want to make sure you had a chance to at least walk through some of that with our community, who I think certainly would be thinking about it.
Yeah. No, I definitely think that the forcing Western values on other people and mistaking that as an essential part of our Christianity is definitely something that has happened and is happening. But I do see that there's a lot of people that are making adjustments to try and go against that too, it's like, I've read it and I can't remember the name of the book off the top of my head, but, like, even on, like, some of the reading lists that I've seen for some of the new missionaries I work with on, like, cultural, like, how to be culturally sensitive to the environment and being creative about how you communicate the gospel in a way that would help them understand it,
mm-hmm.
Where it's like the people I know are trying to understand people so that they can better communicate what they believe. They're not just shooting from the hip and hoping that it works.
Right.
It definitely is the negative side of it, which would be the forcing of Western values on other people, is definitely there. But I think there's a lot of good strides going against it too. So
yeah, I just wanted to, you know, I remember the kind of this, not like kind of not even like moderate middle ground, but rather just this better, I think, approach, which is that I mean it's the hermeneutical spiral, right? Which is that even in doing missionary work, you are seeing how your own values, what from whatever culture you come, let's say, let's speak, you know, about the culture that we share, right? So if you were to go to Japan for 2 years, you would probably see elements of culture within whatever community groups you operate that would be a concern.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some ways they may not affirm the values promoted in the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, though, the hermeneutical spiral would indicate that you also are going to see the scriptures in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to see how the values that you have presupposed, you or me or anybody, have presupposed are good,
mm-hmm.
are also therefore challenged.
Yes.
And that's a really, I think,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I mean, I would love to, I'm sure you've been in those waters with the missionaries you've worked with.
Yeah. No, that's something I'm excited about. That's something I enjoy about the trips that I've been able to take, because it's, I don't know, it by having your, like, your security and comfort being taken away from you, it really allows you to kind of focus in on kind of what's actually important, and what are things that you can actually show grace on, and what are things that, no, that's a really important part of our faith and we need to focus in on it.
So it actually kind of platforms the essential, kind of the you know, whether we call it mere Christianity or like
mm-hmm.
the essentials of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not trying to argue against, like, robust doctrine, but to say that, like, wait, this is something that we can share,
yeah,
independent of culture,
yeah,
culture or values.
Because you need to start with the essentials and then work from there. And from there, from that basis, that foundation, you can begin to challenge cultural norms that they might have that seem antithetical to the gospel. And they can vice versa challenge you on them as well.
Right.
But having that core foundation is really important. I think when you're in a different environment, it helps you kind of focus in on what that really, really is.
Yeah, and I don't know if people are actually saying this, but I think there is this, there are certain assumptions about, I think missions is such a loaded term,
mm-hmm.
depending on who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are these probably wrong-headed assumptions about what's actually happening there. Okay, yeah, fine. Like, so we're going to give money to people who are going to go and, like, pass Bibles around and, like, mm-hmm. convert somebody in bail or something like that. When in reality, I think it's such a good opportunity to talk to you about this, because in reality what's happening is, there is a sharing of cultures,
mm-hmm.
a sharing of, you know, there's this humbling process, and an increase in cultural awareness,
yeah.
and valuing what other people value that you might not have otherwise valued.
Yeah.
Even if some of it is challenged. And I feel like that's just a different perspective. And I think that more voices need to be, I know that that's happening.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth hearing.
Absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to talk about too, and this is kind of more just me sharing something that's really neat that's going on right now. So some of the work that I do with the anti-sex trafficking organization that I'm a part of,
is that an organization you'd like to name or no?
Yeah, it's Project Rescue. So okay. they're based here in Springfield, and they are working in parts of India and Spain, and they do safe homes. They help rescue young kids from really awful environments, and India in particular right now has multiple red light districts throughout the country. I think they had their original roots in the fact that there were cities that were created to be the source of the harems for the rulers before Britain got involved in all of that. But they ended up converting into red light districts once that was no longer a thing. But many of these girls were either sold into it by their families, kidnapped, illegal immigrants that kind of got trapped in it. They're in financial slavery, sometimes literal chains. And because of this whole thing with COVID right now, the government shut down the red light districts. And so these traffickers are not able to make their people work. They're losing money. They don't want to take care of these women. They don't want to provide their essentials. And so many of them are being essentially released, where they're like, all right, your debt's gone. Go. Just can't be here anymore.
Fascinating.
And so we've had the opportunity to begin reaching out to the women that we have relationships with and to provide food and shelter and even vocational training, so that when the red light districts open up, they don't have to go back to it, which is a really exciting thing that's going on right now that I'm getting to work with. But kind of why I wanted to bring it up is that I think our community is very passionate about social justice, and taking care of those that are impoverished or abused or exploited. And I think that it's something that it's really easy to focus on the issues that we have here, and not to focus on issues that are around the world too. I think there's probably too many issues around the world to really focus on everything, but there are opportunities for us to support organizations that are involved in those places and to help bring social justice to other places too.
Yeah, I think there's this very unproductive tension when it comes to social justice, where you have certain factions within Christianity that are saying, how to put it, in a sense they're like almost prioritizing, they're saying, okay, so the gospel is not first about social justice. The gospel is about, you know, the forgiveness of sin, reconciliation to Christ, salvation and servitude to Christ, right? Mm. And then others who are saying that, and others maybe again on some kind of spectrum in the opposite of that, and like, so they're experiencing the gospel almost entirely through the activism of social justice. I don't know how much aware of that conversation you are. But I do think that I appreciate what you said, because I think that what we want is this marriage between that recognizes both realities, which is, of course, we have to recognize at a personal level our own distance from God, our alienation to God. This requires repentance and forgiveness and reconciliation. And that's the exact thing that motivates us, that gives us the stability and clarity to do good for others. And I don't even know that it's this kind of organic thing, right? That it's very much a spiral. Like, the more you are experiencing the grace and love of Christ, the more you're sharing that in radical, radical ways.
Yeah.
And so, again, I don't know that I have organized that into a question for you, but I think that sometimes communities say, okay, we're done with this whole, like, are we just converting them or something? And we want to make sure they're taken care of. They're no longer oppressed. Their needs are met, and so on. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I would say is, it is an act of love to make sure that people are not oppressed. And it is an act of love to make and it is an act of love to reveal Christ to them. Mm-hmm. And to show them the beauty of the scriptures and the Jesus that's revealed within this, right? Mm. So, like, if you say that you love Jesus and you love his orientation toward the outsider, the other, the oppressed, you're also going to love the fact that Jesus loved the scriptures and was constantly quoting pieces of the Hebrew Bible and was constantly affirming the scriptures. Mm. And you're also going to love the scriptures because Jesus is revealed through them.
Yeah.
And therefore, and therein, you're also going to love the gospel.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just trying to address these tensions that have come up, you know, in conversations I've had with people. I don't know if you've felt any of those tensions ever.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure you have. Yeah. Or I'm sure you're aware of them anyway.
Yeah. No, but I think the point that I want to make is that I think our community is focused on being holistic in our approach to our faith, including engaging in various issues and people who are oppressed or viewed negatively by the rest of the community, and being able to help and love those people. And
right.
I think that missions is also one way to do that, in some ways in areas that have really, really big needs.
Right.
So, and it's just another opportunity to be able to engage in that.
Absolutely. I guess I yes to that. And I just think that I want to just, encourage our church, our community, to engage in kind of, to do some, to reflect on their own preconceptions around sharing the gospel as missionaries in their businesses, in their communities, however that looks. Because if you're thinking about the gospel correctly and Christ correctly, you're not showing up at the table saying, my way is the right way. You're actually showing up at the table saying, there was this very particular Christ. There is this very particular person, Jesus of Nazareth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a first century Jew living, you know, in the ancient Near East. And that is not the promotion of American culture and values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we should always be humbled by the strangeness of this person and the how much needs to be done to get there. And I think mm-hmm. I think when we marry that with our serious commitment to social justice, I think we're really onto something. And I think that when it comes to inviting people into loving community, whether it be Center Church or other communities that you have, like, I mean, people have that need. They so desperately need to be known. They need to be given guidance and clarity and encouragement and even correction. And I think that's an act of love.
I hope this encourages you to dream a little bit, that what you already have, whatever work experience or gifting or interests that you have, is possibly a really good opportunity and pathway for you to engage in the gospel and your community. And there's some really fun and exciting ways that you can do that. And I think we need to be a little bit more creative about doing that outside the traditional model that we have.
Love it.
Another one I had, and this is kind of building on the other one, is that it's like there's a lot you could probably do now. You don't have to kind of put it off for the future. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to go and take a trip somewhere right away. It's like we're fortunate enough that Springfield seems to be a hub for many organizations that are engaging in spreading the gospel to different communities around the world. Mm-hmm. There's also a couple missionaries that I know that I'm hoping to invite to our church at some point to be able to share. And honestly, if anyone had interest in a particular place, I have a lot of connections to be able to introduce them. So if you wanted to ask questions or just learn more about, like, what is missions like there, then I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then I think the last one is kind of the big ask, which is, I feel like it's like, go and make disciples of all nations is something we all share, and sometimes that actually means going. And I think I challenge you to be open to that and to let God lead you where that might be. And sometimes it's for a season, sometimes it's for a lifetime, and it's kind of a scary thought to really consider. But I don't know. I would appreciate it if you took some time to think and pray about it. So
I love that. And I think you shared a little bit of this personally at maybe the beginning, but you've had a really interesting journey in all of that, because you began in this place of, right, like this kind of altar experience, right? Altar call experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then, at least at this point in your life, your missions work is, I think, fascinating, exciting, and meaningful, but maybe not even exactly what you would have planned.
Nope, not anywhere close.
And that's, I don't know, isn't that always how it is, right?
Yeah, no. I feel like God
is super interesting. Probably more interesting than if you were to have just orchestrated it yourself.
It's very clear to me, and like if anyone wanted to talk about it more, I'd be happy to, but it feels like God has very much orchestrated my steps. And even being given a calling, which I know is a frustration for some people because they wish they could have a calling of some kind, I feel like hasn't really helped me a whole lot because it gave me a rough direction, but I've still had to wrestle and stumble through so many different things just to get to where I am, and I still don't know if this is where I'm supposed to be all the time.
It's
I think it is. So I feel like God did a lot to get me here, but it's also like, what, God's not done with me yet. So
Absolutely. Ben, you're a tremendous teacher, valued member of our community, and I always appreciate talking to you. This was fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks very much.